This is News in No Time at Gordon on today's roundtable. Democrats step up, a 50 Cent movie in hot water, and a football coach's controversial statement. Joining us from our New York bureau, E.R. Shipp, a columnist at the New York Daily News. Also in New York and making his maiden voyage with us here on the roundtable, Carlos Watson, a CNN political analyst. And joining us from Maryland, George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service. Welcome, and Carlos, welcome to you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to join you.
Let me start by taking a look at, we heard in our last segment, the idea of Democrats stepping up and the need for that. Well, we're seeing the Democrats step up what they are calling their national security plan. We heard from John Kerry, who suggests that President Bush should, in fact, bring 20,000 U.S. troops from Iraq after the country votes on its National Assembly. Madeleine Albright, former Clinton administration Secretary of State, suggesting that 50% a 50% increase in federal spending on Homeland Security and the creation of a domestic intelligence agency and a cabinet level ranking for the FEMA agency. Carlos, when you hear this, is this the Democrats finally getting it and knowing that they're going to have to show the public something?
Two thoughts on this, Ed. One, none of these are surprising. None of the ideas are dramatically new. The idea of elevating the FEMA head or of reducing to some extent the troops next year are ideas that have been out there in one form or another for at least 12 months and in some cases as many as 36 months. But two, what I think is really interesting and significant is that while part of what we're seeing in terms of Democrats stepping up is them trying to fill a policy vacuum and recognizing as we head into 2006 elections that it's important that they've got a affirmative agenda, if you will, and not simply criticizing President Bush. A significant part of it is also what I call the Cindy Sheehan effect, or what you could have called a couple of years ago the Howard Dean effect, which is that part of their response in stepping up is knowing that they're increasingly going to be receiving criticism on Iraq, not simply as they discuss it with Republicans, but from their own base, and particularly those so-called left-of-center grassroots activists.
ER?
Yes. What's the question, Ed?
Well, yeah, just your thought on the continuation of whether or not Democrats are stepping up. Carlos suggests that these are ideas that have been out there, and he is correct in that. But what we're seeing is high-profile Democrats stepping up and being louder about this.
That's right. And they know that this is a time that there is such a vacuum in a way, that this is an ideal time to start tossing those ideas around. But as soon as they were uttered by Mr. Kerry and Ms. Albright, Republicans are already, you know, throwing water on them and saying these ideas are typical of, you know, the left of center crowd. They really won't make the nation any safer. We all know that something needs to be done to address some of the issues we've seen during the hurricane season, where FEMA just hasn't been able to take care of business. We're even seeing that in Florida, the president's own state, where as much as Governor Bush was boasting that the state of Florida was prepared, we're seeing people who don't have food, don't have air conditioning, and may not have that for many, many months. So this is a time, as Carlos said, for somebody to sort of step in and start raising these issues. Perhaps they can get more of a hearing now than they did a few months ago.
Hey, George Curry, I don't remember in my lifetime, and please pick up your point after this, I don't remember in my lifetime that I have seen both parties floundering on so many fronts so often.
Oh, I think they've been floundering a lot, Ed. I think, I mean, even the election, when you think about that, people were totally even people who did not like Bush were voting for him because they disliked Kerry more. I don't think this really means a whole lot, particularly because it's coming from Kerry. You know, I thought he was in the witness protection program. I hadn't seen him so long around here in D.C. So, I mean, so the fact that he can come out and say this is what the Democrats really believe, I mean, it's a major speech he gave at Georgetown, but I don't attach a whole lot to it. I mean, he lost to Bush, so the party really want to make a inroads into the next election. You don't go somebody who's lost to the incumbent. So I don't put a whole lot of credence in this.
Carlos, let me take you to the point I was asking George Curry about, and that's the idea that often you may see one party stumbling, while the other, I think back to the Gingrich years and the contract with America and the like, it seems that Republicans were doing everything right politically in terms of their thoughts from that end. And we can conversely look at years where Democrats were cleaning the Republicans' clock. But it seems to me that there is a whole lot of bipartisan stumbling right now.
Certainly, and a lot of it obviously is tied to three things, which we know, the public's growing dissatisfaction over Iraq, including the latest announcement of the 2,000th death, the concern that people have over Katrina and the federal government's lack of response, and obviously record gas prices. So all those have brought down approval ratings, by the way, in some of the most recent polls, not only of government broadly, both Democrat and Republican, but also of corporations. And you see there's a lot less trust. And obviously what's going on with Tom DeLay, Karl Rove, and some of the others are playing into that. But there's another important point, Ed, that you're pointing at as well, which is that even as Republicans, particularly in the form of President Bush's administration, stumble, it's not a given that the beneficiaries, political beneficiaries of it, will ultimately be Democrats. In fact, I think there's as much a chance as you look out to 2006, 2007, 2008, that really what you may end up seeing is the maverick Republicans, if you will, what I call the John McCain, Colin Powell, Chuck Hagel wing of the party, with an opportunity to, if you will, replace the president, and that the country, in the form of congressional votes and ultimately presidential votes, may ultimately go in that direction. So there is a real risk for Democrats here that even as the president stumbles, that not only will they receive criticism, but that ultimately that power vacuum will be filled not by them, but perhaps could be filled by another wing, if you will, of the Republican Party.
There's another point.
I don't see that happening. I don't see that happening. I really don't. I mean, because, you know, let's not forget when Colin Powell spoke to the party in San Diego, they booed him when he mentioned affirmative action. I think the right wing has a clear hold, stranglehold on the Republican Party, and I don't see that changing.
Well, I was going to make another point that while President Bush may be stumbling now, that doesn't mean that he will absolutely fall. We've seen over history that second-term presidencies are often in trouble, and one solution that I've read about recently is for the president to bring in pretty much a new team, people with fresher ideas, more energy, and perhaps they will reinvigorate the president's remaining term and also hand over to the Republican Party something with more strength and vigor.
Actually, Ed, let me both agree with that point and actually go back to the last point I was making. I think where you could end up seeing whether or not there is, if you will, a coup within the Republican Party and whether or not there's a new Republican leadership is, let's fast forward 12 months to 2006. Republicans right now have 55 Senate seats. Do they keep those? We'll see, perhaps. But if they do, it's not a given that someone who's aligned with the Bush administration and, if you will, the most conservative wing of the party necessarily will be the next Senate majority leader. In other words, it may not be a Bill Frist clone who replaces him. You might get someone, whether it's Lindsey Graham or someone else who's more aligned, if you will, with that maverick wing. So, you know, I think George is right that it's that it would be a holy war of some sorts for the maverick wing to take over. But I wouldn't assume right away that that can't happen. In fact, you could argue that that's part of what happened in 1968 when the Republicans went from Goldwater in 64 to Richard Nixon, who at the time was a new Nixon and was thought of as a more moderate Republican.
All right. Let me turn
to Goldwater, everybody was moderate, though.
Let me turn our attention to something less political, but certainly raising the ire of many this week, and that is Air Force coach Fisher DeBerry expressing frustration after another loss and the slumping performance of his team suggested that perhaps having more black players who can run very, very well would have helped his team. He is also reported to have said that he needed to recruit faster players. And here's a quote from the coach. Afro-American kids can run very, very well. That doesn't mean that Caucasian kids and others can't. but it's very obvious to me that they run, they being blacks, run extremely well. Shades of Jimmy the Greek here, and a controversial statement that he made years ago about breeding black players like racehorses to run. E.R. Shipp, how much of this can be suggested to simply be the truth of the matter, no racist intent, that perhaps black folks just run faster? And can you politically say that today without the kind of controversy we see?
Well, you can probably imply some of these things through your actions, rather than through words that may be taken out of context. And I think that's partly what's going on here. It's kind of the Bear Bryant syndrome, too, I believe. You would know this better than I, George. He realized ultimately that if he integrated his football team, he had a better chance of winning.
Bear Bryant being the iconic coach of Alabama.
He didn't exactly say that it was because they were bred to run, but the implications were that he'd get a greater variety of players. That may be what this particular coach at the Air Force Academy was trying to say.
Well, Bear Bryant said that he got his butt whipped by some black players.
This is true, but so did the Air Force Academy.
But let me put this in a large context. Ralph Wilder wrote a piece in Emerge magazine that we actually reprinted in my book, Best of Emerge magazine, that points out that there's a fixation with this black athlete being superior that has gone back for years. Not only, as you point out, that we had Jim the Greek saying that blacks were bred to be athletes with the large thighs going up to their back. We had Al Campanis on Nightline, remember, in 87, saying that black people didn't have the necessities for this. And then we had the publisher of Baseball Weekly and Football News saying that blacks lack discipline. This is fixation. And the point that the late Ralph Wilder made was this. He said, I know why people keep asking this question. It's important that they keep asking this question. And that is because if black men are naturally superior athletes, it follows in a certain type of mind that we were naturally inferior in something else, i.e. you're great with the body, but you can't use your head. That is the root of this whole controversy that has been there for years.
Carlos?
It reminds me in a way of the president at Harvard getting into hot water by observing that there was a dearth of women scientists and mathematicians, et cetera. And that translated into saying women were less capable of handling those roles. What he said, I think, was largely taken out of context. But again, it stirred controversy and it distracted us for a few days.
I think that's an apt analogy. And indeed, I think if we look at the numbers, at least across the three major sports, the NBA, the NFL, and Major League Baseball, more than 50% of the players in each of those leagues have African origin, whether that's Afro-Caribbean, Afro-Latino, or African-American. And certainly the sprint champions on our Olympic teams for the last 75-plus years, including but not limited to Jesse Owens and Carl Lewis and a whole number of others, have been African-American. And so clearly that's part of it. But I think that in the case of Coach DeBerry, as we've said here, there really are two issues. One, I think, is frankly the language with which he communicated. I think in part using words like Afro-American, and part, if you will, commoditizing people in a sense by saying the black athlete, raised the issues that George spoke to from that Ralph Wiley article. I think the other real issue, though, in the case of Larry Summers, the president of Harvard, that E.R. just referenced, and the case of Coach DeBerry, that probably raises at least the suspicions of a lot of people, are why do we hear you talking about African-Americans for the first time in a substantive and major public forum when it comes to sports? Why not have said 5 years, 10 years, 20 years ago, particularly given how influential he's been at the Academy? Many people refer to him, even though he's not a even though he's a civilian, they refer to him as five-star, as though to say that he is so powerful he's not even a four-star general, he's a five-star. Why not have been particularly aggressive about African-American recruitment, 20 years ago, or 10 years ago just saying that that's a good and right and moral and just thing to do in this society that counts on having the best of everyone and not just the best of one group or another.
I still raise the question of political climate today, in that I would suspect that there will be others who will simply, as I suggested early, for the sake of discussion, who will simply say that in fact, that this is something that, as you pointed out, Carlos, you can show that athletically, often blacks are put on and placed on teams and gear themselves to those who are quick, fast, and in a hurry. And if that is the fact, why not be able to say it out loud?
Well, first of all, there's a problem with it. I mean, just because blacks are more than 3/4 of the NFL and more than half, I mean, of the NBA and more than half of the NFL, that does not necessarily follow that blacks are even better athletes. That means that we dominate certain athletes, and I think there are a lot of reasons for that. I think the reason for it is that it's been a matter of opportunity, where you've had a chance to grow and show what you can do, and also we have an overemphasis of that in our community. I mean, if we were doing ice hockey in our community, I guess we would excel at that too, even though we have a few blacks doing that. But yeah, you have other areas like gymnasts, you do the shot put. You don't see many black athletes doing that. So it doesn't mean you're a better athlete. It means that in these areas where we've had opportunity and an overemphasis on community, should not be surprised that blacks excel in those areas.
Ed, let me actually link this topic to the topic we were talking about earlier, which was President Bush's troubles. You remember that President Clinton tried to have a conversation on race back in the 90s, and that ultimately fell to the wayside. And in some cases, he was heckled, and in other cases, criticized about it. There's only so much presidents can do in their final 2 years. Often they're seen as lame duck presidents. But often some of the most powerful things you can do is do something surprising, something that people wouldn't expect you to do. I think that there's actually a real opportunity for President Bush in his last 2 years, and I'm not suggesting that he will do this, or I'm not suggesting that this is on the top of his list, but in terms of things that would catch people off guard, for someone who's recorded 8% and 11% of the African-American vote respectively, so below recent historical totals, in some cases substantially, I think having a conversation about race and having a conversation that's seen as more than just happy talk, but at times is controversial, provocative, but it has an end goal or several end goals in mind, and is kind of results-oriented in a sense, I think could be a distinguishing major effort for him in his last 2 years. Again, I'm not saying that he will do it, but I am saying that it's the kind of thing you could do when you're, given two final years and your poll numbers are below 40%.
All right. Carlos, I'm glad you're agreeing that he's probably not likely to do it, because it doesn't matter, because he has that language. Sometimes when he speaks of affirmative action, just race relations, he has the right language, but the problem is his action runs in the opposite direction.
All right. E.R. Shipp, George Curry, and Carlos Watson. Carlos, welcome again. Appreciate you being here with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks.